Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the Employment Division here at Car Talk Plaza.
Employment? Get me out of here, will you?
Well, yeah, my brother happens to be allergic to employment.
You ain't kidding.
In case you didn't know. But look, I got a letter here from a listener named Gene Herman who has identified a job specifically for you.
Me? I don't think so.
Well, look, listen to this New York Times obituary of the former holder of this position, and then you tell me what you think.
All right.
Prince Giorgio the First from the tiny principality of Seborga, nestled in the Italian Riviera, died at his home on November 25.
Mm.
In the 1960s, Prince Giorgio, a bewhiskered grower of mimosa flowers from a family of mimosa growers, was seized by a glorious vision that Seborga was not part of the surrounding Italian nation. Oh, no, no. It was an ancient principality, he claimed, cruelly robbed of its sovereignty.
Whoa.
After convincing his Seborgan neighbors of their true significance, Giorgio Carbone was elected prince in 1963. He gracefully accepted the informal title of His Tremendousness. And later was elected prince for life in 1995, by a vote of 304-4.
Ooh.
Those four people will never see it again. Prince Giorgio established a palace, wrote a constitution, and set up a cabinet and a parliament. He chose a coat of arms, minted money, with his picture on it, of course, issued stamps with, what, his picture.
Of course.
Designed license plates, selected a national anthem, and mobilized a standing army consisting of Lieutenant Antonello Lacalla.
Just one guy?
Well, it's a small place, you know. He also adopted a motto for Seborga, sub umbra sede. It's Latin, for those of you who know, which means sit in the shade.
This is starting to sound like it might be a job for Tommy.
Yeah, well, he traveled in a flag-bedecked Mercedes-Benz. You could change that to a 77 Fiat if you'd like.
Yeah.
That was briefly impounded by the Italian police because of its Seborgan plates, but minor detail. Prince Giorgio accepted no salary, although he daily availed himself of ham and cheese from the village shop, a royal perquisite. He left no heirs, and succession plans are uncertain.
I like it. I mean, that may actually be a job I could do.
But you need a better title. I don't think your tremendousness really befits you, you know?
No, that's not me.
How about your dim-wittedness?
Sure, I'll go for it.
Well, look, if you have a question about your car or your position in the royal hierarchy of Seborga, give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jackie from Liberty, Maine.
Hey, Jackie. Where the heck is Liberty, Maine?
Liberty, Maine is 20 miles west of Belfast.
Oh, that tells us everything.
No, I know. I know.
Lake St. George.
Yeah, I know what Belfast is.
Sure you do.
It's Belfast, Maine, yeah. I went up there to get some lobsters once.
Oh, you had lobsters once?
Lobsters, yeah, with an A-H-S.
Lobsters.
Anyway, what's up, Jackie?
Oh, well, I've got a 1999 Ford Taurus with 160,000 miles on it. Somebody gave it to me. That was really nice.
I've
got a problem. I've got no heat. When the weather is like 30 degrees, I get no heat. When the weather goes above 30 degrees, I get all kinds of heat.
Oh, isn't that a tragedy?
That's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, just when you need it.
If only you could do it the other way around.
Isn't that what I'm thinking? If I drive over to Belfast and the sun is shining, the heat comes on when I don't need it.
Does it work any better if you're driving at 60 miles an hour?
We can't drive 60 miles an hour.
30.
No, we tried all that stuff. We tried going 80 and 60 and 50 and see if it would go. And if we'd run it around the block to see if it will, but it doesn't work.
Well, I think what's wrong is that your heater core is plugged.
My heater core has been flushed 3 times.
Yeah.
Once by the Ford dealership. And the heater core works fine. Well, if it works when it's warm, why is the heater core plugged?
Well, it isn't. Here's why it works when it's warm. It doesn't have to work very well to produce some heat because it's taking air. For example, on a 50-degree day, it's taking 50-degree air and bumping it up to 90, okay, which feels pretty warm.
Yeah.
But when it's 20 degrees outside and it bumps that air up, you know, maybe to 40 or 50, then it's not good enough for you to feel warm inside the car. And the reason that it still could be plugged is that it could be just so crudded up inside that there's not enough heat transfer between the hot coolant and the core.
That's precisely what's happening.
So when the hot water goes through it, the core, which is made out of either aluminum or copper, sucks the heat out of the coolant, and that's what makes the thing get warm. But if there's an insulating layer of crud between the water that's circulating in there and that metal, it will work marginally, which is exactly what yours is doing.
That must explain why the heat gauge goes up and then all of a sudden it flops.
Oh, really?
That's usually an indication that you don't have enough coolant in there, but I would imagine
I've had it flushed and replaced three times in the last 6 months.
Well, maybe they have overlooked a faulty thermostat.
I had two thermostats put in. And one mechanic told me I need a heavier one, but they don't offer a heavier one for this car. I've done everything for the last 6 or 8 months.
You have?
Well, I have.
Here's what I would try to, and you probably know that replacing the heater core on this thing is very costly.
Yes.
You know, it's many hundreds of dollars.
600, they quoted.
Yeah, that's about right. That's many hundreds.
Have you thought about moving south?
You know, in North Carolina, this would be perfect.
This wouldn't bother.
No, thank you.
No, I don't think you're going to have any solution here but to bite the bullet and put a heater core. I don't see any other solution to this problem.
You don't.
And it's from our vast experience, because we've replaced quite a few of these at the shop. And we usually have pretty good luck, if we catch them early enough, flushing them out. But when that doesn't work, there's no remedy. And you're going to have to bite the bullet, Jackie.
I may do that.
Either
like
that or stock up on Bronco Nagurski long underwear.
No. My Mad Bomber hat works just well.
Well, there you go. Yeah, you know the thing that stinks about not having heat is you don't have defrost.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You could live without heat because you can dress warmly enough.
I could.
But you can't live without defrost.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, that's right.
Unless you do what my brother did. He had a lit hibachi on the front seat, but that's another story.
That's an idea.
No.
That worked.
See you later, Jackie. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let us know your make out.
Okay, I will.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Enough digits in there? Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Megan. I'm calling from Medford, Oregon.
Hi, Megan. From Medford. What's going on?
I have a 97 Volkswagen Golf. It has 106,000 miles on it, and I have a manual transmission. And originally, I've always parked my car in first gear, usually without the emergency brake. I only use the emergency brake if I'm really on a steep hill. But ever since the summer, if I park my car in first gear with no emergency brake on a hill, it will start to drift down the hill.
Oh,
and I thought
really?
I was going crazy one morning when I walked outside and my car on my sloped driveway was down by my sidewalk.
Uh-huh.
And then a few days later, I was actually in the car, slow getting out, and it started to drift back when I left it in first gear with no emergency brake.
What's the farthest it's ever gone?
Well, it's always just hit the sidewalk, and there's been no pedestrians, no other cars, no trash cans around, so there's been no damage from it. But I've always just now, since the summertime, I've parked in first gear, and I use my emergency brake regardless of where I am.
And when you found the car after its attempted escape, was it still in first gear?
Yes, I really don't notice any difference with it since this has been happening.
Well, there are several things that could cause this problem, none of which are good.
Oh, no.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, with 106,000 miles on it, it's possible that the clutch is starting to slip.
You bet.
Okay.
So the clutch is the link between the wheels and the engine, and if it's a weak link and it's slipping, it's going to roll away. So that's the $1,000 option.
Okay.
Okay, let's go to door number two, which is the possibility that you have low compression. You see, the other thing that's working against you here, perhaps, is the fact that you don't have enough engine compression, and as such, the pistons are allowed to move up and down as gravity is trying to pull your car down the hill.
Okay. How many miles did you say you had in this?
106.
How much oil does it burn?
I have a small oil leak that I maintain, but it's nothing major.
And does it feel like, well, you wouldn't know if it has good power because it's eroded over time, but have you felt that heretofore it had pretty good power?
Yes, I really don't notice any difference with it since this has been happening.
Okay, so if it does need the engine rebuild and the ring job, that's the $4,500 option.
This is getting higher.
But the fact that you're leaving it in first gear is not the best thing.
Okay.
Okay, reverse is always better, no matter which direction your car is facing, because you want to provide the car with the least amount of mechanical advantage, and the biggest gear ratio for just about every car is reverse.
Okay.
So you want to always leave it in reverse.
So keep using the emergency brake regardless.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and you could have somebody test the clutch for you, but you might not want to know.
Is this a problem that I should just maybe rather ignore until it gets worse down the road?
Well, how do you drive this car daily? I mean, where do you go? What do you do with it?
Oh, mostly short trips around town, back and forth to work, and then occasionally longer trips on the weekends. But
how far is work?
Oh, only 10 minutes away at most.
Oh.
How far are these weekend excursions?
Probably 20 miles.
Do you have a AAA or something akin to that?
Yes, I do.
You're all set.
Okay.
Because when the clutch goes, it may just begin to slip so badly that you can't drive it. I'm guessing it's the clutch.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your help.
Yeah. Well, $1,000 down the drain. See you later.
Okay.
Good luck, Megan.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
It's interesting when something works for a long time, even though you don't know why it works, all of a sudden you don't understand why it should stop working.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Things wear out.
We couldn't understand why you stopped working. You used to come into work every day.
Yeah.
Right, with your
little
coveralls
by little
on.
I disappeared.
Then where's Tommy today? He didn't come in today. Well, maybe he doesn't feel well. And then it gradually grew from a day to 2 days.
Yeah,
to
and
a
then
week.
I forgot how to get there. All right. Do you know what time it is now?
Time to activate the seat heaters on your park bench.
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps. This is the part of the show where we check back on a caller from a previous show.
Yeah, we start by calling all the local hospitals. So who's our lucky contestant this week?
This week it's Malcolm from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Remember Malcolm?
No, remind me.
Well, Malcolm called us back in October because he was having a little problem with his 2000 Mercedes E-Class wagon.
I'm not really having trouble steering, but the noise that's coming from the steering wheel is becoming more and more undignified.
And what kind of noise is that?
It's sort of a la 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 la.
Oh, how nice.
I took it to the dealer, and they gave me my cappuccino and went in and came out in 10 minutes and said, oh, you just needed the power steering fluid topped off.
Uh-huh.
But it's only gotten worse since then.
When you took the car to them that day, was it making the noise even as you drove up to their door?
It was.
And then, yes. And then when you left, after they gave you the cappuccino and the fluid and the bill for $88 or whatever.
Oh, it was more than that.
It was more than that. Was it still making the noise?
It was, but knowing very little about cars, I thought, well, maybe it just takes time for the fluid to kick in.
That's awfully accommodating of you. I wish we could get more customers like you.
I'm the ideal customer.
Yeah, it takes time.
I went in there with a problem. I still have the problem, and it only cost me $300.
I love this guy. We got to get him to do training seminars for our customers.
Yes, indeed.
So what did we tell Malcolm was wrong?
We narrowed it down to the power steering belt or the belt tensioner.
All right, Malcolm, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, look, before you fill us in, we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk, have we?
The restraining order helped with that.
And the answer you're about to give has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of NPR, or by the cappuccino machine and the noise-canceling headphones that we send you.
That's what I can remember.
So how many more cappuccinos did you get out of it, or was it a belt or a belt tensioner?
Well, I did get a couple new cappuccinos when I went back to the dealer, but I must say you were right about the belt.
Really? How did they finally acquiesce? Did you suggest it was the belt, or did they finally come to it on their own?
I went in and asserted myself and told them it was the belt. Unfortunately, though, that it was the belt and they fixed the belt while I was there, I didn't drive home with my 2000 Mercedes.
No.
I drove home with a brand new Mercedes E-Class wagon.
What happened? They sold you a new car?
They did. I'm a soft touch. Oh,
you are a chump of the first order.
Wait, how old was the other car?
2000.
It was a 2000.
So let's go back a minute. After you spoke to us, you obviously went back with the car. Was it on that visit that they lured you into the showroom, or did they actually fix the car and give you an opportunity to drive it before they tried to sell you the new one?
Well, I was sitting in the waiting room for people getting their Mercedes fixed, and a salesperson came in and made sure I was comfortable, and then said,
"Well, they give you a pillow or something? What?
A cashmere throw, you know, they're really good." You know? But he said, "Why don't you come take a look at the new Mercedes E-Class wagon?"
You should have said, "No."
You know, I turned the corner into that showroom, and the car had me at hello. I traded in the old one and bought the new one.
Oh, what a sap! Anyway,
Malcolm, thanks for playing Stump the Jumps.
Good work.
My pleasure.
Enjoy the new car. You're gonna love it.
I do love the new car, and, you know, the steering works great.
Great.
And you can stop by our shop anytime.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you hear someone you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
All right, look, before we give the answer to last week's puzzler, we have to take a short break.
What was last week's puzzler?
Well, I thought for sure that you'd remember it because it features you in your skivvies.
In my skivvies? Was I in a beauty contest, perhaps?
Yeah, you won the lack of talent competition. No, you were a sun-dried tomato farmer.
Oh, weighing the tomatoes.
Right. And we'll have all the details and more of your calls in just a minute, so please stay tuned.
I just can't remember what I was doing in my skivvies.
Don't ever say stuff like that out loud. Well, on your way to your death. And even though our avatars beg us to delete them whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more Car Talk.
Yeah, like if you're a jackhammer operator and miss grating noises when you get home.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and of course the answer to last week's puzzler. Mm. Robert Underwood sent in the idea for this puzzler, and it goes something like this.
Yeah.
A few months ago, Tommy, who in the last few years has become an avid gardener, harvested a bumper crop of juicy ripe tomatoes.
Yeah.
And this year, instead of making his usual 11 gallons of marinara sauce, he decided to try something a little different, sun-dried tomatoes.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, being the scientific type that he is, he wanted to weigh his harvest at the outset and then again after the tomatoes had dried in the sun. So we tried piling them onto his bathroom scale, but they wouldn't fit and they kept, you know, rolling off. It was then that Tommy had an inspiration. He got the biggest cardboard box that he could find, and we stripped him down to his skivvies.
Was that really necessary, I ask?
Well, we didn't want to risk exceeding the weight limit of the scale. Every ounce counts, you know. Anyway, he and the empty box and his skivvies weighed in at 148 pounds.
Okay, so 148 is the baseline.
Exactly. I then began filling the box to capacity when no more would fit. I balanced one or two on his head, stuck a few under each armpit, and wedged a couple between his knees. Anyway, when they were all accounted for, the scale read 248 pounds, so he had harvested exactly 100 pounds of tomatoes.
100 pounds.
Yeah, pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Now, in case you didn't know it, tomatoes are 99% water and 1% tomato. You know, skin, seed casings, red dye number two, whatever is in tomatoes, I don't know. But 99% of a tomato is water, so 100 pounds of tomatoes are 99 pounds of H2O and 1 pound of the other stuff. Now, here's the question. After a whole week in the sun drying out, Tommy's tomatoes were now 98% water. If we reweighed them and Tommy in the box and his skivvies like we'd done a week earlier, what would the scale read?
Mm.
Here's the deal. At the outset, we had 100 pounds of tomatoes, right?
Yeah.
And we said they're 99% water and 1% you know, skin and whatever other solids there are.
Yeah.
So the solids were 1 pound.
Yeah.
And that 1 pound is not going to change when they dry out. It's still going to be 1 pound of solids, right?
Yeah.
So when the moisture content has been reduced to 98%, that mass of mushy, disgusting tomatoes is now 2% solids and 98% water. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we can write a very simple algebraic expression that says 2% of X, where X is the total weight of the partially dried mess of tomatoes, has got to equal 1 pound.
Yeah.
Right? So 0.02 of X is 1 pound.
So X is
50 pounds. So when we put Tommy and these mushy tomatoes back on the scale, the scale's going to read 198 pounds. It's kind of hard to believe that the moisture content goes from 99% to 98%, and the weight goes from 100 pounds down to 50.
Wow.
Let's not forget that when the mess of tomatoes is down to 2 pounds, it's still 50% water.
Wow.
Pretty cute, eh? Do we have a winner?
Ha, ha.
Uh-huh.
We do have a winner, and the winner this week is Bruce Swanson from Hudson, Iowa. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Bruce is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division of CarTalk.com.
And what can he get with that, Johnny?
Absolutely nothing of value, of course. But he can get a copy of our new CD, Tales of the Brothers Grind.
Ah, yes. This is a new collection of stories that we've told on the air, including tales of my brother's misadventures in the United States Army.
Yes, with my old pal, Sergeant McNeely, calling my name Private Magliozzi.
It also includes the first time my brother and I sang Goodbye, My Coney Island Baby on the air.
Which was also the last time we sang Goodbye, My Coney Island Baby on the air.
Indeed. Anyway, a copy of the Brothers Grime CD can be yours for being this week's Puzzler winner.
Congratulations, Bruce.
Well, we'll have a new Puzzler coming up later in the show, so stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, if you want to talk about your car, we'll be happy to listen. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Mike calling from Scappoose, Oregon.
From where,
from
Oregon?
Where?
Scappoose, Oregon.
Scappoose.
Scappoose.
Yeah.
I have to say, I've never heard of it.
What, Oregon? Anyway, what's going on, Mike?
Well, I've got a 1980 Mercedes diesel, and we converted it to run on vegetable oil, used vegetable oil.
Oh.
And the problem is, I'll come to a stop while I'm driving, and when I start to go forward again every once in a while, there'll be this huge clunk sound come from the back of the car, like I have a bowling ball rolling around in the trunk, but I don't.
How long has it been doing this?
Probably since about a year.
So you just got around to calling us now?
Well, the line's been busy, right?
Well, I did replace the rear axles because I figured that's what it was. So I replaced that, and since then, I've looked around and I've tried to, you know, do stuff to fix it, but I just can't figure out what to fix.
So you replaced the rear axle. This has independent suspension in the rear, so you have two axles that have CV joints on them.
And you replaced both of them?
Yeah.
And when you
and
did,
nothing happened?
Well, the car drove a lot better, but no, the clunk is still there.
Oh. And describe again under which circumstances it happens. You're driving along.
Yeah, come to a stoplight, light turns green, start to go forward, give it a little bit of gas, and you'll hear, it's just like if you had a bowling ball rolling in the trunk, and you start to go forward, and the bowling ball rolls to the back and slams, and that's what it sounds like. And then you're good, and you keep going.
How?
So it only happens after you've stopped and restarted.
Yeah.
And you can make it do that every time. Can you do it if you go in reverse?
No, not in reverse, and it doesn't do it every time either.
And does it do it the first thing in the morning when you just start it up?
Usually not.
Usually not.
Oh. See, I think that, how confident are you on a scale of 1 to 10? On a scale of 1 to 2, how confident are you that the noise is coming from the back? Because I think it's coming from your transmission. I think what's happening is you're getting a harsh shift between first and second.
Okay.
This is an automatic transmission, I assume.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Oh, definitely.
Sure.
And I think that's what's happening. And it's somehow telegraphing down the drive shaft and making you think that it's coming. And you know what it's actually doing probably is, because there's a hesitation in the shift, it might be supplying power to the drive shaft, and then there's a little pause because it's the shift isn't smooth between first and second, and it would be akin to driving the thing along and then slamming it in gear. And maybe you have enough wear, enough lash in the gears in the differential that it's making this banging sound. But I think the problem is at the transmission.
You know what you might really want to do?
Yeah.
Take it to a real mechanic. He can crawl underneath it if he wants to. He wants to be
you might be able to reproduce this sound on the lift.
I wondered about that. I thought if I set it up on jacks in my garage, maybe I could get under it and have my wife, you know, push on the gas. And then I thought, that sounds like a really dangerous idea.
It is. Of course it is. My brother thought of it.
No, make sure your wife finds all the relevant life insurance policies first. And if there's anything that needs to be signed, make sure you sign it before you crawl under there. But I think it would be a lot safer to go to the repair shop where they have a real lift, and I'm guessing you won't hear it because it's undoubtedly the kind of a noise that requires a load, and that load has to be the mass of the vehicle. So I'd be very surprised. You might be able to get a hint of it, however.
Yeah.
But you might also find out that maybe your drive shaft has a bad universal joint or something like that.
Okay.
But in the meantime, check your transmission oil level. If it's empty or if it's low, fill it up. If it's dirty, change it, and you may be able to change the dynamic of this enough so that you can figure out that it's coming from the transmission and not the other end. But I think it may be a shortcoming in the transmission that's telegraphing down, and then wham, it's slamming that drive shaft and taking up that lash in those differential gears, and that's what's giving you your bowling ball noise. Unless, of course, it really is a bowling ball.
Now that I checked, I emptied out the whole trunk and drove around for weeks.
And I bet you can get this to be worse if you really floor it off the line.
Well, it's a 30-year-old diesel. It doesn't, you know.
You don't floor anything anymore. Yeah,
or it's like, you know, yeah.
Yeah, never mind. I'm sorry I went there.
That was a bad idea.
I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. See you, Mike.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello. My name is Cher, and I'm from Wilmington, Delaware.
Cher from Wilmington, Delaware. What can we do for you?
I have a 2003 Ford Mustang convertible.
Okay.
When it rains, tiny hairline cracks in my convertible roof, the rain gets through and does just monstrous things to my car. My trunk is always wet, so I can't put anything in there. It pools where the convertible top goes down in, so when I make a right turn, it sounds like I'm at the ocean. And then the worst of it is that it, like, shorts out the electronics, so I get a police siren. It comes out of my radio that I can't turn off. It's so loud.
Can you see the water coming in?
I can't at all.
You don't?
I see the puddle that it creates.
And where's the puddle?
Where the top goes down in, when you take down the convertible top, it sort of folds back into behind the back seat.
So what you see is water way back there.
Yeah.
So have you taken this to the Ford dealer?
Yes, and the dealer said that I have tiny hairline cracks that they can't repair.
And you need a new top.
If I get a new top, it's a couple grand. I'm wondering if there's anything I can do that could help me out.
Well, you know, El Paso, Texas has like 330 days of sunlight every year.
Vegas. Move to Vegas. That's what I need to do.
Yeah, well, Vegas might be too hot. But El Paso's pretty hot, too. You could do what my brother did. He never put his top up.
Okay.
So he kind of spread the water over the whole inside of the car. It wasn't just relegated to that area behind the back seat. No, this is a problem that I think you're going to have to bite the bullet on.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Is there any way we can get insurance to pay for a new top?
I asked them, and at first they said no, but then I called back and said, okay, but if my car dies because electronically it just completely shorts out, then is that a problem insurance would cover? So they said to, you know, get some estimates and we'd talk about it.
Oh, really?
Oh,
so
yeah.
I guess there's potential.
I'm sure Tommy was thinking about something a little more nefarious.
Like, I was hoping we would be real sneaky about this.
Right. I get it. I'm sorry.
This is even better. No, this is wonderful.
No, if you can do it legally, why not? But it may be that you're eligible for something.
But if you can't, could I park it in New York?
Well, that's what you could do. And then here's what you do. You leave a laptop
on the back seat?
On the right on the dashboard.
Oh, yeah.
And the easiest way to enter a convertible is to slash the top.
Yeah.
Right.
So
make sure you lock everything up.
Oh, yeah. Don't leave a window or door open. Yeah, leave the price tag on it and make it look like you just absentmindedly left this, because it's going to be just the box.
Right.
You know, and you left it on the dashboard, and somebody will slash the top and they'll steal the box, and then they'll probably go berserk and slash the whole, maybe slash your tires and everything. You might get a whole new car out of this. Actually, we want to be clear that we don't want you to do anything like that. I mean, that would be dishonest. As lucrative as it sounds.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's no real shortcut here.
Can you park this thing inside when it rains?
I can't. I mean, I guess I could buy a cover.
Well, a car cover would certainly help.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But it's only a matter of time with all that water in there that it's going to start to stink to high heaven.
Yeah.
Like all of Tommy's cars. Well, eventually what happens is mold starts to grow.
Right.
You know, and then when there's mold...
No, if you leave the windows open, it's fine.
Oh, no, it isn't. Where there's mold, there are mushrooms. Yeah, oh, no, you'll have your own, you know...
Picky.
Well, look, in the short term, get a car cover, because once that mold starts growing back there, you won't want to drive it.
Yeah.
Tommy doesn't mind it, because he's got the same mold growing on his clothes, but that's another story. See you later, Cher.
Thank you guys so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jeff from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, Jeff, what's going on?
I have a squeaky noise in the front end of my 99 Explorer. It's two-wheel drive.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was shocks because it, like, you hit a bump and it... But now I notice that it does it when I turn the wheel too.
And even if you're not moving.
Yeah, I can be sitting there and see, and I use it for delivering mail. I do that part time, and so I hear it all the time, and it drives me
nuts.
So you must have a gajillion miles on this thing.
Actually, it only has, I think, 97,000 miles on it.
Oh, really? It's practically brand new.
Yeah, I mean, I just did the brakes, and I mean, because they were squeaking, and now I have this noise, and I don't know what it is.
Oh, I'll tell you, I know exactly what it is. It's either, you know, he's laughing because you're expecting some wise guy answer, and I'm going to give you the real answer because I'm worried about you, Jeff.
You're not the only one.
You have either a ball joint or a tie rod end that's out of grease. And
okay.
You can't grease any of these things. Everything's sealed at the factory. But once the grease that's in there dries up or escapes, what happens is the joint is now metal on metal, or actually metal on nylon. And you get that squeaking noise, just like a squeaking hinge on a door.
So you got to replace it.
Okay.
So the way you figure out which one is which is you can listen with a stethoscope-like device, which you call a piece of hose, okay? And you can have an assistant turn the wheel left, right, while you listen. You have two ball joints on the left wheel and two ball joints on the right wheel and two tie rod ends.
Okay.
And you can listen to this thing, and you can probably figure out which one of them is making the noise pretty easily.
So now how hard would that be for me to replace? Like, is that something that I could do? I just did my brakes. I mean, I'm sort of mechanically inclined.
Have you ever replaced a ball joint before?
No.
Do you have a lot of vacation time coming up?
Not that much.
This is not probably not the easiest vehicle in the world to start on.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to need a press to get the ball joints out. So if you wanted to go out and buy some extra tools, you might want to do that. The tie rod end is a little less challenging.
Okay.
But separating it from the steering knuckle can be difficult. So I would say that you might want to watch the guy who does it, and then you might have the courage to do the other side when it starts making noise.
Okay.
But get it fixed because joints like this that have no lubrication can wear out and come apart.
Oh.
And if the tie rod end separated, okay, you wouldn't be able to steer the vehicle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay?
Don't wait.
That's going to be key in driving it.
Yeah.
And if you do lose control of it, those mailboxes will slow you right down as you start taking them out.
Yeah.
Good luck, Jeff.
Thank you.
No mail today for those customers. Bye-bye. All right, look, we are once again at that particular point in the show.
Is this when the geisha girls come in with hot towels and warm sake?
Would you take Bugsy in his pajamas with a wet nap?
Sure.
Well, right after this short break, we'll be back with this week's brand new puzzler, which is from my automotive history series.
And we'll take lots more of your car questions, too, so please stay tuned.
Straw hats and sports cars, cruise the Autobahn, razor wire on the walls, old world charm. Horse black S4 podcast it on the floor. Thick as thieves knocking out, knocking down the door. Good old German ingenuity.
And even though chimpanzees pray for opposable thumbs so someday they can turn their radios off when they hear us say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Collect, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the new Puzzler, which I did say a minute ago is from my automotive history series.
Yes, I'm very interested.
And it was sent in by a fellow named Tom Lilly. And I had to, you know.
You had to mess it up.
A little bit. Anyway, here goes.
Yeah.
I have a cousin whose name happens to be Vinny, and he's kind of a pain in the butt kind of guy. But from time to time, he comes across these vintage automobiles, which he buys so he can flip them, you know, and make a quick buck. He seldom owns more than two or three at any given time, and his flipping rate is often determined by whether or not his wife has contacted the divorce lawyer. Well, one Sunday morning, Vinny called the house and told me he had just purchased two American-made cars at an auction, and I should come right over to check them out. He went on to say that one of them was made in the early 60s,
okay,
and the other was manufactured in the mid-70s. And get this, you ready for this?
Yeah.
He didn't think that I'd be able to tell which one was which.
Really?
Well, I told him he was nuts. I mean, I grew up in the 60s, and I know all the cars from the 60s and the 70s, and I was positive I could tell them apart. Well, he bet me $50 I wouldn't be able to.
Really?
Now, before I took the bet, I had to ask a few questions. You know, like, was he going to put a bag over my head or anything like that? Were these real cars? I mean, are they passenger cars? They're not trucks. They're not buses. They're not toy cars. I said, no, it's legit. These cars are actually made, manufactured in the USA? Yes, he said. They're not modified in any way? You know, they haven't been turned into hot rods or made into something unrecognizable? No, they're all original equipment.
Yeah.
Then I asked, could anyone have bought either of these cars? He said, absolutely. Have I ever driven either one of these cars? I'm not sure, he said, but I bet you've probably seen them.
Wow.
Really, I thought. How about we make that bet $100? And you know what? I'm so confident, I won't have to get any closer than 50 feet to these things to tell which one is which.
Wow.
He said, you're on. As I grabbed my coat and car keys, I shouted out to my wife that she should make a dinner reservation at some fancy restaurant downtown. I'd be right home with Vinny's $100. Well, a few minutes later, I pulled into Vinny's driveway. Of course, he was outside waiting for me.
Of course.
Well, I said, show me these things. And you know what? If I can't figure out which is which, I'm going to pay you, I said, $200.
Yeah.
He pressed a button on that garage door opener. And I was pretty cocky. You know, I had conjured up all these images of these cars on my way over there. And even the weirdo cars, like the Nash Ramblers and the, you know, and the Studebakers and all that. But when I saw that garage door open and I saw the cars, my jaw dropped. All of a sudden, a sure thing was now at best a 50-50 proposition, and if I lost, I was going to lose $200 to this dope. So what were the two cars that he had bought? Now, if you're thinking of the answer, write it on a quart of Dickinson Hill Farms, kiln-dried, bug-free, long-burning cherry firewood, cut, stacked, and delivered in an L.L. Bean wood storage rack with storage rack cover, Dura-Tough log carrier, hearthside toolkit, and fireplace gloves, and send it along with an 1880 Mansard Victorian with a working fireplace to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
If you have a question about your car, give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. Yep. Where are you from?
I'm from Weetag, Connecticut.
Weetog?
Weetog, that's right.
Okay.
Where's that?
In
it's
Connecticut.
A small little hamlet that's part of Simsbury.
Oh.
And everyone knows where that is.
No one knows where it's at.
No.
No one knows how to spell it, and no one knows how to say it either.
That's all right. Well, Weetog, we're with you, Barbara.
Okay, great. I'm calling you because I would love it. I have a wonderful husband. He's brilliant. He's a Harvard graduate and thinks he knows everything. And I'm calling you to settle a dispute because this year we both bought new cars. I bought a 2009 Acura RDX Turbo.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband bought a Subaru Forester, no bells and whistles in it, standard shifter. And the other Sunday, we were heading out, and it was snowing, and I said, which car? He said, my car, of course, it's better in the snow. To which I said, are you crazy? My RDX is much better in the snow. It has all-wheel drive all the time, and I can also shift it into four-wheel drive. And he says, I'm crazy, so we're counting on you guys to settle this.
Oh, your RDX, I believe you can engage something called the center differential lock.
That's right.
And you can make the thing a real four-wheel drive vehicle like those vehicles of old, where all four wheels were getting power and couldn't, you know, be affected by the differential. So he thinks his Forester is better because why? Because it has less power?
Dr. Gray says this to me.
Dr.
It's lower
Grace,
to the ground. And so because it's lower to the ground, I said, gee, Mike, I really think that the four-wheel drive vehicle is constructed above the ground so you can actually go over things like snow.
Oh, I think ground clearance is a big advantage with any vehicle, whether it's two-wheel drive or four-wheel drive. When you're in snow, you want as much distance between the underside of your vehicle and the road as possible.
Yeah.
And the reason is, no matter how many wheel drive you have, if you get hung up on the snow, you're not going anywhere. So his Forester being closer to the ground than yours is a disadvantage. The disadvantage that you have, however, is that your thing is a turbo. So it's hard to apply power gently and smoothly sometimes with a turbo. But, you know, starting off from a dead stop, I think you would definitely have an advantage with both the center differential lock and the extra ground clearance. I would have to be in your corner, Barbara.
I'm with you.
Oh, good.
Oh,
he's
good.
Right up. He's up to his nose, isn't he?
In what we won't say, but he's
right.
He better stand on his tiptoes.
Well, thank you both so much.
But you have to remember that you have to accelerate gently in your car. And it isn't a problem taking off from a dead stop because the turbo's not going to kick in unless you floor it, which you're not going to do. But the risk you run is when you're on a road that's snow-covered. If you hit the gas too hard, you could lose control of your car because the turbo will kick in. Of course, you do have traction control and all that, which should mitigate some of the adverse effects of the turbo kicking in. But there's no question that a turbocharged car can be a disadvantage in ordinary driving snowy conditions.
All right, good to know, because I sometimes do have a lead foot, so
yeah.
I'll keep that in mind.
Okay, I'm sure you will.
I will, definitely.
All right. And break it to him gently, will you, Barbara? I don't know if he'd be able to take it.
I'm calling him at the office.
I'm sure you're calling
him.
See you later.
As soon as possible.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Beatrice calling from Kutztown, Pennsylvania.
Beatrice. Does everyone call you Beatrice, or do you have a nickname?
I have a nickname. BB.
BB?
BB.
BB. Yes, it's a Swiss German for little chick.
Well, we'll call you. We haven't figured out what we'll call you yet.
Like BB.
BB's good.
Okay.
So what's
okay.
up, Beatrice?
Well, I have a bit of a problem. It's actually not regarding my car. I'm 15. I can't drive yet. It's my mother's car, which is a 2003 BMW X5. And I may possibly have infested it with Madagascar hissing cockroaches.
Oh. And how, pray tell, did this come about?
Well, about 6 weeks
ago... I mean, cockroaches are bad enough. They have to have a cockroach that hisses?
Yeah. Madagascar, they're wingless and they're large and...
Where did you find them?
Oh, at a pet store. It was a present.
You actually paid for them?
I did.
Most people just bring them home in their luggage.
This is good.
Well, it was my father's birthday, and we have a bit of a, you know, competition who can get each other the weirdest presents. So
yeah.
I thought that, you know, a Madagascar hissing cockroach would be perfect. I went down to the pet store and picked up a couple and was driving back in the car, and I took one out to gross out my little sister in the back seat, and I dropped the cockroach, and it scurried away in the car, and we could not find it anywhere.
And you think that's the female that had 7,000 eggs?
Well,
could well
in
be.
Short, yes. So that was 6 weeks ago. We spent an hour searching for it. I went back to the pet store. I told the woman what happened. And she said, well, which cockroach did you drop? I said, the larger one. She said, oh, fabulous. That was a pregnant female.
They shouldn't be able to sell pregnant females. What are they, crazy?
Well, my one consolation was I thought, you know, it's from Madagascar. This is, you know, we're in a cold Pennsylvania winter.
Right.
There's yeah. no way that this cockroach can survive for 6 weeks.
No.
So I kind of forgot about it. Of course, I didn't tell my parents that the cockroach was pregnant. I said, oh, you know, I thought I saw it escape out the window. Not a problem.
Yeah.
And then about a week ago, my mother goes and going to drive down to the gym early in the morning, and she sits down and she sees what looks like a toy bug on the floor of her car, and she reaches down to pick it up, and it hisses and jumps on her.
Oh,
probably jumped right up her gym shorts. Oh my God.
It had survived for 6 weeks in our car.
Well, the little I know about cockroaches is that they're incredibly adaptable. And I don't know about a Madagascan hissing cockroaches, but the garden variety cockroach has been around for like 300 million years or something like that. So they can take a variety of temperatures and climate change and whatnot. But yeah. I was going to suggest, I mean, you don't want to use any chemicals, but here's what I think you might want to try. A big block of dry ice.
Really?
I think so. Dry ice is like minus 200 degrees below zero. So you want to drop the temperature down inside the vehicle as far as you can possibly get it.
So would we only put it in after when we're not in the car?
Oh, yeah, you can't be in the car because dry ice is solidified CO2.
Yeah,
so if you were in the car, you'd black out.
We'd freeze up.
Right, and freeze up too.
Yeah.
You'd black out first, and then you'd be frozen, and you'd be
so
dead.
So you want to put a big block of this ice in the car at night.
Yeah, close the doors and windows and overcome them with cold and CO2.
Okay. And how long should we leave it in the car?
Six months.
12 hours?
Six months. Well, I think it's long enough for the CO2 block to dissipate. And I don't know who you consult on this. You've obviously consulted us, and we're giving you.
I'm lost. There's even some controversy about the nature of how many babies and what kind. Are they all contained in one large sack called an Uthaka, or are there 250 eggs around the car?
Well, you know, it's only a matter of time, BB, before they get into the ventilation. They're going to get into places you can't possibly imagine.
Yeah.
And I know if I were driving and one of these things hissed at me and jumped up my pant leg, I'd be crashing into a tree. On purpose.
The best thing that could happen here
is a fire.
A fire. Exactly right. You got to set that car on fire.
Oh, geez. And it's a nice car, too. And
not anymore.
I'm driving soon. And this car is soon going to be mine. And I don't really want to deal with the
cockroaches. Well, it serves you right. Jeez.
Yeah, I suppose so. Okay, well, I'll try out this dry ice, and I'll see what I can do. And
this is just a thought. I mean, before you go ahead and do anything so ill-advised, you've only obviously done one thing ill-advised. Before you go ahead and do another ill-advised thing, you might want to check with somebody else to see if, in fact, this will kill them. Bibi, you have to do an experiment.
I think I do. The woman I talked to originally said there was no way that it would survive in our car overnight, and it managed to do that for 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah, she was wrong about that.
Does she have any more of these?
Yeah.
Okay, here's what you do. You go back to her store.
Okay.
And you buy a couple of more.
Okay.
I mean, you got 6,000 of them in your car now. What's two more, right?
Exactly.
And you put these things in a cardboard box or something from which they can't escape.
Okay.
Okay? And then you put a small quantity of dry ice in there. Okay? And see if
see what happens to it.
Right. If after the dry ice has evaporated, if they're still running around, then that ain't going to work.
Gotcha. Absolutely. So then we might need to try a less humane method.
No. Hang on, we're getting some information coming in here. Our producer has looked something up on the web for you.
Oh,
And the question is, do they make good pets? Oh, he found out that they do make good pets. They're hardy and won't die easily.
Yes.
Great.
That's bad pets.
Perfect.
Oh, God. Well,
man,
I would try an experiment with a couple of fresh ones and the dry ice and see if that...
I bought more than one, so I still have them. You know, their names are Sartre and Nietzsche. My father's a philosophy professor, and they're actually, they're in front of me right now. So,
yeah, well, they may be, you know, I'm thinking, rather than our instinct is to try to kill things we don't understand. I mean, that's animal nature. Whether we're human animals or other kinds of animals, we always try to, when we confront something that we don't understand, we try to dispatch it. But maybe we should try to lure it out. Maybe there's a way, you know, you might be the cockroach charmer.
You know what? Maybe I should try that. I should try treating them with a little bit of kindness.
Well, the good news is we found out from our internet search here that there are only 30 to 60 eggs in that female.
Rather than 250.
But they can live to be 250 million years old.
What?
What? Well, good luck, BB. I can't say you don't deserve it.
I'll give you a call in 6 months if I can't get rid of the stench of the cockroach corpses that are in my car.
Oh, I think that would be the least of your problems.
Thanks so much, guys.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, what a
See,
fun
if
kid.
If she lived anywhere near us...
We'd be right over there.
We would take her car immediately to Nissen Mom's and set it on fire.
And crush it.
And then crush it, right.
Oh, boy. Well, look, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Tennessee Bumblebee, Sugar Pea, Shrimp Louie, Sarah Lee, Melted Ghee, Cold Kimchi, Sweet Iced Tea, Creamy Brie, Pinot Gris, Sunny D, Eat for Free, Jamboree, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Mara Genovera. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our PR specialist is Ulion Sack. Our sensitive language advisor is Holly Schmidt. Our staff philosopher is Ray Zondette. Our Broadway reviewers are Ike and Stan Musicals. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the tweed jacket-wearing ice sculptors in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1003, shuffle through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, Behind the Grease, a sneak peek at what goes on before, during, and after our weekly show.
Really, are there photos of us hard at work?
Of course.
Reading the latest manuals and repair bulletins, I mean, right up to airtime?
Absolutely.
And pictures of our staff scurrying around, hitting every time post with military precision?
You bet there are.
So the entire thing was photoshopped, right?
Absolutely.
Check out Behind the Grease, a behind-the-scenes look at the making of Car Talk.
All this week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though another piece of the Roman Colosseum crumbles off whenever we say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.